And welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer, where we equip churches to move from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Revitalize and Replant is brought to you by the North American Mission Board.
Welcome to episode number 59 of Revitalize and Replant. My name is Tom Rainer. I am joined here by Jonathan Howe. And as you know, every other episode, we have our great representation of the North American Mission Board, Mark Clifton, Mr. International Harvester.
Yeah.
But he's not here today.
I was at the Wilson County Fair this past week.
Yeah? Yeah.
And they had a tractor pull going on.
Well, for the uninitiated, Wilson County is a county in the Nashville area that's probably more of the rural origin,
a little bit. Yeah.
But
it's definitely blue collar.
Yeah, but great county.
And, yeah. And they tractor had, pull. They had a tractor pull, and I've never seen a tractor pull before. It was fascinating to me. And there were International Harvester tractors doing it, so I took a picture and sent it to Mark, and he loved it.
So this reflects my total ignorance. Is the purpose of a tractor pull, is it like a race?
No, it's the distance, but I don't know the purpose. I had no idea how it was working. I could not understand it.
All right, but how do you win, Amy J?
It's whoever goes the longest. The sled. It was a big old sled they'd hooked to the back of the tractor. But I didn't understand like why all of a sudden the tractor stopped. I couldn't. Like, it was it picking up dirt? I didn't understand why it stopped. Because for 200 and something feet, it was just rolling right along.
Well,
my tractor pull knowledge is a little lacking.
And you have so much sports knowledge. I mean, you're
tractor pull, though?
Yeah.
I watch NASCAR, but I don't watch tractor pulls.
Yeah, right. NASCAR is for the white collar. Yeah, exactly. You're talking about. You know, I attended my first rodeo ever in Williamson County a few years ago, like 3 or 4 years ago. And I actually put out on Twitter, tell me what I'm supposed to be watching for, because I had no idea.
Really? You've never been to a rodeo?
I'd never been to a rodeo.
That's crazy.
Okay. I didn't understand a lot of things. I mean, why is that clown out there trying to get beaten up?
Entertainment, man. Entertainment. No, strictly for, and to protect the riders, too.
Yeah, I got that, but why is he in a clown outfit?
Because it's more fun that way.
Okay.
I don't know. That's a good question. Why has it got to be a clown? It doesn't have to be, I guess.
All right, here's another question. And forgive me, audience. We'll get back to the podcast in just a moment. Why is the nature of the horse not taken into consideration when you're riding the bucking bronco? So if you're on a very difficult horse, why don't you get a little pass on that as opposed to an easier horse?
Well, part of the score is made up of how well the horse does and how well the horse bucks.
I thought it was just length of time on the horse.
No, you've got to get to the 8 seconds, but it's like a two-part score, I believe. I'm probably going to get a nasty gram from a listener who knows more about this. But I'm pretty sure that the bull or the bronco or whatever it may be, the saddle horse, has a score, and you get a score. So it's how well the horse performed and how well you performed, or the bull. But and if the horse doesn't perform, you get the option for a reride. So that is part of it. So if you go out there and the horse doesn't do what you need and you can't, you know, get a ride, they give you an option for a reride with another horse.
There was really a part of the rodeo that I have to admit I enjoyed. Kettle corn.
Oh, okay. I was going to say end.
I got kettle corn, and I had permission every 30 minutes to check my phone.
Oh, okay. Well, I grew up going to rodeos, so it's been fun.
Louisiana. I didn't exactly grow up as a city boy in South Alabama.
So. I've been to the Angola Rodeo.
The Angola Rodeo.
Yeah. Listeners will know what that is.
Okay.
Angola, the prison in Louisiana, they do a big prison rodeo every year with the inmates.
They're all kind of one-liners that I am not going to respond to.
So I've been to that.
All right.
As a kid, I went to that. So anyway, rodeo's fun. I enjoy the rodeo.
How did we get on this topic?
Talking about me going to the tractor pool and International Harvester tractors being there and Mark Clifton.
Oh, and we'll talk about North American Mission Board at the end of this and tie it into Mark Clifton. So forgive us for the 4 minutes of straying down the path a little bit.
Revitalization and Rodeos. That's our other podcast that comes out on
Rainer's Saturday. Revitalization and Rodeos. All right. Question is from Carlos.
Yes, Carlos has been a bivocational pastor while attending seminary. He graduates in the spring and wants to take on a replant or revitalization church. So what should he be looking for when interviewing with future churches to know if they're potentially good churches to pastor?
Oh, great question.
So looking for those that want to be replanted, want to be revitalized. Yep. And that's what our topic is today.
Yeah, and you know, what is really encouraging among other things, and I recently wrote this, Jonathan, I don't know if it's for a future podcast or blog post, but I remember the content. And I think I was talking about why pastoral tenure is going to be increasing, which is a future podcast.
Yeah, that's episode 61.
There you go.
2 weeks.
And so 2 weeks from now, I'll be talking about that. So a little bit of preview about that is that one of the reasons that pastoral tenure is increasing is because we have more and more pastors that are really excited and encouraged about getting into church revitalization. Usually that would be the dead end that you would leave and you would only be there for a short time. And as we'll note 2 weeks from now, it is happening on both ends of the age spectrum. It's happening with young pastors saying, I feel a long-term call to revitalization, and it's happening with retiring boomers who want their fifth quarter of ministry to be in a revitalization situation. So we'll talk more about that, but I'm really, really encouraged about how many leaders are getting into revitalization. But let's get back to Carlos's question. What do I look for when interviewing with future churches to know if they're potentially good churches to pastor?
Yeah, looking for a kingdom mindset. And we're going to talk about six characteristics of those. Number one is a sacrificial mindset.
To be clear, Carlos, a sacrificial mindset will not be ubiquitous. It will be in some of the church members. You will rarely find a church or any organization for that matter where everyone has a sacrificial mindset. But Carlos, if you go into that church and you hear people talking about what they want to do for the community, or even more importantly, what they are doing for the community, if you hear less about what I want, my worship style, my temperature, my volume in the worship service, and the list goes on and on, or what the church programs, what we need for me, myself, and I, if you hear less about that and more about where we see opportunities to serve, to make a difference, you're going to go into a church that has real potential. But don't be naive, and I'm not assuming you are, Carlos, but don't be naive to think that it is going to be all church members, not even all leaders, not all deacons, not all elders, not all staff people are going to have a sacrificial mindset. But the good news is it only takes a few. It only takes a few in order for the church to have a good chance and a good potential. So one of the first things you look at is, are there sufficient number of people, even a handful, that have the sacrificial mindset that are ready to move forward?
All right. Number two is an other focus. So focus on others.
Related to that, but let's talk about who the others are.
Yeah.
Let's talk about different categories of other. One of the others is the members, myself.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to worry about what I'm going to get. I'm going to look after the needs of the others. I mean, it's Paul's admonition to consider others as important as yourself. So you're looking out for the needs of the others. You're not asking the question, what is the church doing for me? You're asking, how can I help others? Another other is people in the community.
Yeah.
Are you doing things for people? Do you have a desire to be the other in the community? And there is another other. I had to pause that one. And we will touch on this more in the future because I think we need to expand upon it. And it is, what are the needs of those who are only digitally connected with the church?
Hmm.
And how can we help them? We will see more and more ministries begin to have a significant place in the church with digital connection, whether it's the podcast or streaming or whatever. I am okay. If you're somebody that's, you know, constantly trying to catch my little nuances, we just talked about a particular guy that does that. If you're someone trying to catch my nuances here, I am not suggesting that the internet church become the church.
No.
I'm not doing that. But I am saying in the digital world, you have a lot of connections and we aren't taking advantage of those in ministry.
Yeah. People are connected to your church who, A, don't go to your church, and B, don't live in your community.
Right.
Just because of the internet.
Yep. Exactly. So how do you minister to them? Prayer ministry is an obvious one.
Yeah.
And we'll be talking more in 2019 about a ministry that can really connect with this digital world, but that's to be discussed later. So other focus is about other members, the immediate community, and the digital community. There are obviously others,
and others around the world. It's a missional focus, you know, those kind of things.
But the whole idea is looking beyond myself. If you see those kind of people in the church, again, Carlos, just a few, then you're going to see a church that has potential. And we obviously, as we get to number three, we've already began to mention that.
Well, quick question on that one. What maybe a question that Carlos may ask in an interview, maybe just asking, and I was just thinking, like, so I'm sitting across the table from a search team, and I asked them, what is your favorite ministry, or what ministry are you passionate about here at the church?
Yeah.
Would that be a fair question?
It would.
To see if it's something that that's ministering, you know, to them.
It's a perfect
or
question.
Ministering to others.
It's a perfect question. What's your favorite ministry? What ministry in this church are you passionate about? Gets you really excited. Yeah. What is your vision for this church? That's another way of looking at it. Do they have an other vision, or is it a self-serving mm-hmm. vision? Carlos can ask those questions. Again, Carlos, don't expect everybody to answer them the right way. Expect some of them to do so.
Yeah. Well, what would be the wrong answer to hear there?
Okay, let's don't talk wrong. Let's talk warning.
Yeah,
okay?
A red flag answers.
A red flag is, well, you know, my dream for this church is that we'll have a worship style that's a little bit more traditional or mm-hmm. a little bit more contemporary.
Or so, that we're going to build a new worship center or something like, I mean, just like something that's more just focused on the church itself.
Yeah, yeah. Those are warning flags. Those are not stop signs, to mix the metaphors. But those are the type of things, you know, what excites you the most? Building a building? How about the ability to minister as a result of building a
building?
Sometimes it's how you phrase it instead of what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So I think Carlos will pick up on those. And this number three, though, is critically important.
All right. It's a love for the community.
Love for the community can mean many different things. It can mean a tip of the hat without any type of action connected to it. A lot of churches say we love our community, and then you try to get into what does that mean, and it's very little. Now, I'm going to say something, and don't take this the wrong way, even though there's that risk. A love of the community is not a once or twice a year event. It is good to have major events, medical, social needs, back to school. Yeah, those are good. And I'm not suggesting that you do away with those. But if you think a love for the community is just one or two things a year, basically you're saying we're doing our duty and then we're getting back to us. So a love of the community is something that is perpetual. A love for the community is something that is consistent. A love of the community is actually drawing people to the community. Here's a common thing. Jonathan, I asked a church one time, in a consultation, asked several church members, tell me how you reach out to the community. They had a good thing going on. They had a day where you had free medical care, free dental care,
cool. Like that.
Clothes, all that. But it was a day. And then they went back to normal. Yeah. And here was the common comment that they would make. These people never come back to our church, though. I don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there were two parts to that. Number one, they're not going to come back because you're not building relationships. You're building event connections, which mm-hmm. is a big difference. Secondly, you're seeing the people as objects to increase your attendance rather than people to whom you minister, which is a big difference as well. You shouldn't be asking the question, are they going to help us? You should be asking, are we going to minister to them?
Mm-hmm.
So a love for the community is consistent, persistent, and even pugnacious. It is something you are stubborn about.
Three P's in a poem here. We'll be done shortly.
No, actually, wasn't it consistent, persistent, and pugnacious? I think it was CPP.
Well, I missed it. I don't know my letters today.
Well, there's a reason why. For those of you who may have heard a previous episode, Jonathan Giard caught on fire this morning.
Well, the electrical, not the yard. Well, yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway. Yes. So a love of community, super important. And then number four, this is one that I don't see churches, they're hesitant to do this.
Yes.
But a forsaking of idols.
Okay, let's define idols for just a minute.
Sacred cows, those kind of things?
Sacred cows, things which get undue attention that do not carry out the mission and vision of the church.
That people see as more, wrongly see as more important than the mission and vision of the church.
An
it's
idol,
more important for us to have X than to do.
An idol can be a room like a parlor.
Yeah.
We've talked about that in at length in Autopsy of a Deceased Church. An idol can be an event that is ineffective, but you're just going to keep mm-hmm. on doing it. I was in conversation with the Church Answers guy about an annual event that they have in their church, and they don't. The event has attendance, but it doesn't have effectiveness, and they keep on doing it, and it's more because the church has a what they're finding out is people in other churches are busing their church members to this event, and they're not reaching anybody. So but they're going to
community wide holy huddle. It's basically
they're not reaching beyond the church community to any extent. They wanted to know, why aren't we reaching people through this event? We have so many people show up. Well, the people that you have showing up already have church homes.
Yeah,
you know, is the purpose of the event to entertain other churches? If so, you're accomplishing that pretty well. That is an idol. An idol can also be the way we do staffing. Mm-hmm. Traditional staffing.
We have to have a minister of
X, blank, whatever the case may be, instead of saying, what are the needs of the church? So any type of object that has more important than that which accomplishes ministry can become an idol in our church. Most idols start off as effective ministries, and then they degenerate into the way that we've always done it.
Mm. I you could like stick on that forever, but we got to move on.
Okay, we'll move on.
A willingness to let go. It kind of relates to the idols too.
Yeah, willingness to let go of a lot of things. You're going into a revitalization. Are they willing to change the worship service to reach the community? Are they willing to have? Let's use the example that it's an all Anglo church in a community that's 20% African American, 30% Hispanic, as an example. Are they willing to let go of the Anglo control of that church to have representation?
And that was one of the probably the most frequent question we get about Autopsy of a Deceased Church.
Yes,
was the control issue and how things in the church.
In fact, most people
don't
even know what it means when I say you need to let go. What do you mean by letting go? You mean we don't have any control anymore? Yes. Yes, that is what I mean. I haven't heard that in a while, but that was a consistent question that we got on Autopsy of a Deceased Church. By the way, we're mentioning Autopsy of a Deceased Church, so we'll have it in the show notes in case y'all haven't.
And Carlos gets a copy too.
Yeah, Carlos always gets a copy of it because he's asked such a good question. But as you communicate to a potential search committee or to whomever you may be talking to about going to this church, do they say, you know, we need to be willing to do whatever it takes. David Youth, you know David Youth?
Yeah, First Baptist Orlando, or was? Still there.
Still there.
Sorry, David, I just retired you. I'm sorry.
I heard David speak the first time he was a pastor in Louisiana. What church was that, Jonathan?
Well, I have no idea. I didn't know he was in Louisiana. That's fantastic.
Yeah, before he went to Orlando.
God's country down there.
And I heard him speak, and he talked about that church, the church I cannot remember. And you know if you heard something 15, 20 years ago and it still makes an impression upon you, it was good. And he communicated this. He said, in our church, our philosophy is whatever it takes, whatever it takes. And he wasn't talking about getting outside of biblical boundaries. He wasn't talking about weird type of things. But he said, our church has made the commitment, whatever it takes to reach our community, we are going to do. And those three words just come back again and again, whatever it takes, whatever it takes. Well, sometimes it takes things that I'm uncomfortable with. Sometimes it takes things that aren't my preference. And so I have to be willing to let go. So, Carlos, as you talk to the church, maybe a direct question would be, are you holding on to some things that maybe the church needs to let go? See if they even have a response to that. That'd be good to find out.
It would be. All right. And then finally, they need to have the mind and heart of Christ.
Yeah, this goes back in many passages of the New Testament. Perhaps Paul's letter to the Philippians reflects it more. And keep in mind when he's in that great Christological hymn in Philippians 2, and he says you should have the mind of Christ, and then he describes it in that Christological hymn. Keep in mind, Paul was writing a joyous church.
Mm-hmm.
He was writing a church that was happy.
Yeah.
He was writing a church that was glad to be church. You didn't hear much other than Yodi and Syntyche, and then later.
Well,
later,
they got called out, didn't they?
They did. It's like, we have two problems here. Stand up.
You and you.
Yep. So it's a book of joy in a church that was joyous. Why was it joyous? Because they had the mind of Christ. So, you know, what does that mean? Well, the Christological hymn of Philippians 2 is pretty basic. The hymn is about having the mind of Christ. Have this attitude as in Christ Jesus. And then it talks about him going to the cross, and he did not consider even his connection with God to be something that he held on to. You talk about letting go. He let go of his privilege of the Godhead in order to sacrifice himself on the cross. So the attitude and the mind and heart of Christ is the mindset that you're looking for. Carlos, are you going to get it with every church member? No.
Nope.
And even in the best churches, you're not. But if you can see that there's a core, that there are a few, which I have been blessed to have in every church that I've been in, even a tough church, you have potential to see that church go to the next stage. That's the type of kingdom mindset that you need when you're about to replant or revitalize a church. Which brings us up to Revitalize and Replant is hosted by the wonderful people at the North American Mission Board.
Yep, Revitalize and Replant is always sponsored by the North American Mission Board and churchreplanters.com. More than 10% of churches in North America are at risk of closing, and the North American Mission Board is committed to reversing this trend by decreasing the death rate of existing churches while simultaneously increasing the birth rate of new ones. To learn more about what it means to become a replanting pastor or to explore resources for replanting and revitalization in your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.
Okay, once again, thank you for being here at episode number 59. We are two episodes away, two from episode 61. And I'm excited about episode 61, as I've indicated, because that's the episode where we'll have cake. And I've explained it to Jonathan because it's the episode after episode 60.
Okay.
Thank you for once again being here. We'll continue to look at issues that are important to revitalization of churches, that are important to replanting of churches. And we really want to grow healthy churches together.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer. If you'd like to learn more about re-energizing your church to reach your community, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Play or in your favorite podcasting app. For additional resources on church leadership and to join the conversation online, visit TomRainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.